Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jason Wetzel once again from Scenic Downtown Fayetteville with Lynn Pryor, the creative genius of the Gilbert Theater. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Jason. I'm glad to be here. Here we are with show number whatever it is. And aren't we having fun going through our old scrapbook?
Absolutely.
That huge old ledger, chock full, and every day I sit there, but it's so big I have to kind of put my head down like this and look at it at a 90-degree angle. I was so glad when you said to me the other day, I'm going to paste these things back in here. You said, no, this isn't acid-free paper. We need to have all of these things from the huge binder for the first 8 years of the Gilbert history out of there in sleeve. What kind of sleeve?
Archival quality acid-free protection.
Then they'll go in a box and so on. So I've been very happy. I have been tearing things out willy-nilly without any thought of saving the original scrapbook. So I've been having more fun this week looking at this thing and that thing. You know, over the years, we had so many responses in the paper. The Observer has been a friend to us from day one. Perhaps I talked about this weeks ago. I'll say it again. Opening night 21 years ago, we had no track record. We didn't know it. Nobody knew us. Opening night, no one had ever even heard of even been to a Gilbert play. And yet I called the paper and pitched what we were doing, and they sent one of their top writers and photographers and gave us a full page of colored photos, and we were off and running.
Marvelous.
So ever since then, and to this very day when we are opening Young Frankenstein on Friday, the musical, Steve Santa, the director, just left this very studio. I've been wanting to say studio for months now, because even though AKA dining room, it's also a studio, right, James?
Right.
Because
there's
no studio is a real romance about that word. Just saying it gives me just a thrill. It shows. Anyway, we won't talk about that now. The other thing I have right here is a letter to the editor that came. Was sent in to the Observer, this was November 23rd, 1996. She had just seen Friendly Fire. We were talking about that last week, weren't we? And this is what she wrote. Fayetteville Observer Times, okay, she's an early, must have lived here for years. Attention editorial page editor, so on and so forth. Dear sir, premier production of the highest caliber is now being featured at the Gilbert Theater. It is the play Friendly Fire. Mr. Lynn Pryor, creator of this unique theater, is to be congratulated for producing this brilliant play written by Chris Canfield. The three main characters give strong performances as well as one supporting role. You'll be drawn in by their skill and be mesmerized. Each dramatic scene reveals their troubles, culminating in the dramatization of this actual tragic incident. If you recall, it was a true story, Jason. This is virtual theater, only you don't need special headgear. You just need to be there. And of course, this was before the internet.
Very well.
And it wasn't very nice. And it's signed, Carol Kanan. Thank you, Carol. Wherever you are, you came. You didn't miss a play for years and years. We so appreciated your patronage. Here's another letter, a different kind. This is a personal letter to the members of the Gilbert Theater. When we did that in June 1994. Actually, that date is wrong, but anyway, I can't read it. We'll forget about the date, but it's years and years and years ago. And we had done, I think I mentioned to you that we did a benefit for a home in Bangladesh, an orphanage for Mother Teresa's orphans in Bangladesh. And I got this message from Sister Martinette Rivers. Dear members of the Gilbert Theater, greetings and gratitude from our poor in Bangladesh and me. Although gratitude isn't the greatest of all virtues, I think it is the partial. It's not the best, greatest of the virtues. It is important. Saying thank you to anyone, whether it's a deepening personal growth. James, we probably should cut this. Okay, we'll cut this. We might just, I'll simply say right now, we had a lovely letter from Sister Martinette Rivers thanking us for the contribution to that orphanage.
From Bangladesh,
right.
Written in cursive, I imagine.
And written in cursive, and I needed my magnifying glass to, but nevertheless, we are moving right along. And I've chosen another play in that early period, Jason, that was a real showstopper. Keeley and Do by Jane Martin. Now, I'm telling you what we were able to do on those 11 and a half by 13 feet of that stage. And we're going to look at these photos in just a minute and describe them to our audience. But the story goes like this. It's about abortion. And let's see what our director says about it. Director's notes. This and our wonderful director, Marcel Casals. Keeley and Do is more than a play about abortion or about the logic or illogic of either side. It is about choice, that human quality which allows us to start to chart a life. We use strange phrasing when we speak of choice. Quote, I had no choice. Quote, you have no choice. Quote, I had to. Quote, I will not. Quote, I cannot. Quote, I was told to. Quote, I will not allow it, and on, and so on. We are constantly justifying, clarifying, excusing, or blaming our choices. We surrender to obstacles and present them to others. We impose our choices on others and blame others for our choices, all in the name of everything from selfishness and from fear to righteousness and love. This play does not give us an answer, but it does illustrate our relationship to the human quality of choice and the struggle that ensues when our choices come into conflict. Thank you, Marcella, for that wonderful note. Well, our play this is one of those times when the setting was absolutely perfect. You know, we referred to this space downstairs as the basement. Well, it was a basement, but it was also the garage. Because in those days, mid-1920s, the cars, these huge old cars came around the back and came in there. They didn't want those unseemly things. In those days, cars were still kind of new, taking up the beautiful look of a house like this one, which is Tudor English Romantic Revival. And so those cars were down out there, out of sight. And so it's a basement, it's a garage, but nevertheless, our stage, 11 and a half by 13, I'm forever saying, we were able to do that so well because the play was set in a basement. Why? Because a woman, pregnant woman, had been kidnapped. Her name was Keeley. And she was divorced from her husband. Then her husband came back into the house one night and raped her. And at that rape resulted in a pregnancy. And she did not want to carry a child from a rape. So she had gone to a clinic to have an abortion. And when she is approaching, I guess I kind of forgot, she's at parking in the parking lot, parking, moving toward the clinic, she's grabbed, put something over her head. She's thrown into a car and driven away. She's kidnapped. and taken to a house and put in this basement. And the idea, and it's the group that had kidnapped her were pro-life, I mean, to the extent, I'm sure the very ones today who are shooting doctors who perform abortions, who are firebombing abortion clinics, or getting around the law but a dozen different ways all over the country. We know the story about the right for women to choose is being approached in all ways to keep her from getting her choice, making those choices. Well, in this case, she is kidnapped, put in this basement, and chained to the bed, the idea being that she's going to be kept there until she delivers. What is this? What kind of premise is this for a story? And there's a preacher who is behind this whole thing. And so our wonderful Rhonda Brocky played Keeley. She wakes up from the drug or whatever in this bed, in a nightgown, and in this basement. And there is a nurse. Her name is Du, played by our incomparable Joyce Leib. And the nurse is there to spend, you know, much of 24 hours with her, to see to her needs as a pregnant person and so on. The preacher comes in, and of course, Keeley is very upset and finds out, you know, pulls on the chains and finds she's chained there. Well, the play goes on. The preacher comes in and tries to change her mind and all, but. Even brings in her ex-husband who had raped her. He then comes in and sits in the bed and says to her, "I'm sorry I did that, and let's see have the baby come to term and we'll get back together." Well, she did not want to be around him anymore. He had raped her. She's carrying his child. So he kisses her hand, and then Keeley grabs his hand and gives it a very vicious bite. He screams, before this happens, it's Keeley's birthday, and so Du is going to have a cake and brought her a dress to wear, something different to wear. Put on the dress, have a little party, have the cake, celebrate her birthday. Well, the dress had been brought in on a wire hanger and put there on the chair. And then the hand is bitten, and he goes. The former husband goes running out, and Du goes with him to see to his hand. She's a nurse. Well, Keeley sees the wire hanger, and you can guess what happens. She undoes it, and in the darkness performs the abortion on herself. And it's when they come back in, she's bleeding. And in terrible shape, and probably would lead to death. And they very skillfully turned the sheet over so that there was blood. It was beautifully choreographed, the whole part. And then, but they get her out of there, get her to a doctor, and her life is saved. The final scene, Du is behind bars, and she has had a stroke. And she's speaking in this kind of broken way like this. And then Keeley has come to visit her. And Keeley is fine. Baby is a little longer. And they have, the play ends when Du, who was, just pro-choice, as you can see, how extreme. And she coos. Du is unable to speak much anymore, but she is able to say one word, and she says to Du, she's standing behind these bars, looking out at Du and Keeley, and Du says,